Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. I'm trying to be energetic this morning. It is Monday, so April 30th is the day. If you're looking at your calendar today and it's busy, know that God is with you through everything you're going to do today. He's already gone ahead and prepared what it is you'll be involved with and what you'll say, and trust Him for all of the meetings you're going to have and the encounters you might have, and look for opportunities to share your faith if possible, because what else do we have to do, huh? All right, on this day in 1789, George Washington took office as the first president of the United States. And I say that because my in-studio guest, Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog, just gave me double thumbs up on that. So we're going to bring him on the program in just a minute. He has written an article which just was recently published in the Wall Street Journal. It's the lessons, the biblical lessons we can learn from President Lincoln after the Civil War. So we're going to discuss that with him in just a minute. And President Trump may attend the opening of the new U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem next month. Speaking at the White House last week, he said he's very proud of the decision to move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv. He said previous presidents vowed to do it but never followed through. So we'll see if that happens. Kind of a big deal. So that is, we have Jonathan Den Hartog in studio, and then Dr. David Aikman is going to be with us in this hour. So it's going to be a very interesting hour. My IQ always goes up a little bit when Jonathan comes into the studio and I speak to David. So it goes crashing down quickly after the show, just so you know. It doesn't last long. But for just a minute, I feel a little smarter. All right, it's 6 minutes after the hour. Next up, Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog. All right, it's 7 minutes after the hour. Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog is a professor of history at the University of Northwestern. He's also a chair of the department. He's a scholar advisor for the Faith and Liberty Discovery Center in Philadelphia, and he is in my studio this morning. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning. So happy to be here.
Thank you for coming into the studio. I always look forward to when you come in because you're so smart.
We do what we can. I put on a tie just for you, Bill.
I know. I figured. Now, I want to talk to your about your article in the journal, but I also want to start about talking about this Faith and Liberty Discovery Center in Philly. What is that?
Yeah, I'm really excited to be talking about that. So the American Bible Society has been in existence for over 200 years, and as they've relocated recently to Philadelphia, they said, how can we get Americans more engaged with the scriptures and show Americans the ties that have existed between the scriptures and the development of the nation? And so they are working to open the Faith and Liberty Discovery Center, and I should drop in faithandliberty.org.
Nice.
To tell people this, the goal is to have it open by 2020. So mm-hmm. It's in development now. And they've brought me on board as one of their scholar advisors to help give some input into what it will be like. And everyone on the team is just really excited for the way it's coming together.
Mm-hmm. So how do they go shopping for scholars? Start with cool names? Jonathan Den Hartog. No one will question that name.
I think they were looking for connections for people who have written about Christians in American history.
Yeah.
and connections and who are also committed to the scriptures. So all of our meetings have just been really good, really encouraging in that way.
That's exciting. Won't that be a wonderful place, I mean, to go learn about the faith that was involved in our country and all the people involved in pursuing liberty? And
The first of all, just the location is great.
It's
on the mall, the Independence Mall in Philadelphia. So visitors will be able to see Independence Hall, the Constitution Center, the Liberty Bell, and a museum talking about how faith works into that.
And, I love it.
And so hopefully it'll encourage people. It'll give them some historical background. And I know the goal is really to encourage them to say, if there were these positive results, maybe I should learn something more about these scriptures that have produced it.
Yeah, I love it. And then how is this being funded? Do you know yet, or is that top secret?
As far as I know, they're soliciting donations. So I'm sure if people wanted to get involved, faithandliberty.org would be a great place to go and really get on their mailing list and find out how it's developing. And I think there's also some there's already some great historical resources there and some great videos.
Cool. And I can say I knew him when, which is going to be awfully fun as well. Now, this is not the first time you've been published in the Wall Street Journal. Congratulations once again. We're going to learn this morning a little bit about Lincoln's biblical lessons of reconciliation. His second inaugural had a little Luke 10 in it, didn't it?
It had multiple passages as I started to dig into this. And so I think of in American political rhetoric, Lincoln's second inaugural address, which he gives in early 1865, might be the pinnacle. I think it'd be really hard to top. And so just going back to it and reflecting on how Lincoln saw the Civil War was coming to an end, but he wanted to prepare the North for that. And the message that he sent was one of how can we reconcile with the South? So the theme of reconciliation, bringing people back together and reestablishing unity was really valuable in 1865, but it seems like there's a very timely character to that now when we're feeling maybe a little bit more disunited as a country.
Mm-hmm. Do we have an appreciation for how faith was involved in bringing the country together after the Civil War?
What I try to suggest, although it may have been a little bit hard in 700 words, was I think there was a real resource for bringing the country together there, and that Lincoln, even though we can't entirely nail down Lincoln's personal belief, but he was trying to use the scriptures to help the country see a way back together. Now, my suggestion, though, is that was a resource that wasn't always followed, because in reality, there after Lincoln's assassination, I think there was some misplaced trust in Lincoln himself. I think there was a lot of desire for revenge and retribution against the South. So I don't think the country totally followed the possibilities that Lincoln had laid out, which meant that the Reconstruction period was a lot more complicated and hard than maybe it needed to be.
Mm-hmm. So this happened. It was Good Friday that year. And so there was the idea that Lincoln walked through the defeated city. A few days later, you said General Robert E. Lee surrendered his Army of Northern Virginia to Grant. And then it's Good Friday. And then Lincoln didn't go to church, but went to see theater that night.
That's correct. So,
okay.
So the second inaugural was delivered in March. Presidents throughout the 19th century were inaugurated in March rather than January.
Okay.
So the second inaugural is in March, and that was the idea I wanted to pick up on. But time-wise, mid-April mattered because this was the very last moments of the Civil War. Lincoln has visited Richmond, the Confederate capital, and then it was Good Friday in April when he was assassinated. And so, yes, he was looking for some sort of relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to go to Ford's Theater. Ford's Theater publicizes this because, of course, you want to come and buy tickets when the president is in attendance.
Right.
And this is the tip-off that John Wilkes Booth needs to go and to assassinate the president.
Don't you wish you were talking to someone smarter than me when it comes to having a discussion about history?
There is no one I'd rather be talking to this morning than you, Bill.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan. Now, help me with John Wilkes Booth when it said that that he announced from the stage that he would avenge the Confederacy's loss. Was he an actor in the show that night?
Not in the show, but he was well known. He was an A-list celebrity.
Oh, okay.
At the time. But
so he got some stage time just because of who he was?
He had been in many, many plays before this, but his loyalties were with the South. And so his announcement was crying out after he had fired the shots, "Sic semper tyrannis," which means "thus always to tyrants."
Mm-hmm.
And so he was suggesting by channeling the Virginia State motto that Lincoln was a tyrant and that to him the war was not yet over, and so that this was still an act of war.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jonathan, I want to keep digging into the scripture verses that Lincoln used in this address. You say Luke 10 was a big one. What about, didn't he use something from the book of James as well?
There were, I found at least three passages.
Okay.
So we can dig into each of those if we want.
I do want.
So you mentioned Luke 10, and mm-hmm. I think this is really important. In the final paragraph, one of the things Lincoln says our duties are to bind up the nation's wounds. And as I was studying that phrase of binding up, there are actually several biblical passages that talk about binding up. And as far as I can tell, I think the biggest inspiration comes from the story of the Good Samaritan.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Good Samaritan is walking along, he finds this man who's been beaten up by robbers, and it says he binds up his wounds, and he pours in oil and wine. And so there's that theme of binding up, taking care of your neighbor, your fellow citizen, both would have been known by Lincoln and would have been recognized by his fellow citizens. Now, as I was doing some reading, I also found out that in Hosea chapter 6, it talks about God binding up our wounds. Mm. And so that might have also been playing in it, but I think the strongest passage is the Good Samaritan, and so he's really asking people to serve, I think, as Good Samaritans to their fellow countrymen.
I love it. Jonathan, let's continue this conversation after the break at 16 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog. We'll be back in just a minute. Minutes after the hour. Good morning. It is such a pleasure to have Jonathan Den Hartog in studio. We're discussing an article he wrote for the Wall Street Journal about President Lincoln's second inaugural address and the way in which he used scripture. And in the closing line of his article, he said, "In the present moment, a desire to bind up must be a precondition for resetting some of the fractures the nation is experiencing today. Americans should look to Lincoln's words as an enduring call to reconciliation." Nice job, Jonathan.
Thanks. This is the timeliness piece of it.
Uh-huh.
That when we look in the country, there's a lot of things pushing us apart. But I think just on the level of common good, right, serving the common good and appreciating what God gives us as even common grace, we should work for greater harmony and reconciliation in our country. And I think Lincoln, as a citizen, speaks to those concerns as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's continue on some of the scripture that Lincoln used in his address. Interesting, Luke 10, and then you think Hosea chapter 6?
I think Hosea 6:1 may have 6:1. Been in the background as well.
Yeah, yeah. And then also in the book of James.
Yeah, so again, in the inaugural, Lincoln says we need to care for both the person who was born the battle, for his widow and his orphan. And again, studying this, where in the scriptures does it talk about widows and orphans? Well, James chapter 1.
Mm-hmm.
James chapter 1 says true religion before God is twofold, right? One is to keep oneself unspotted from the world, right? So kind of some separation and holiness, but then also to visit the widows and the orphans in their need, in their affliction. And so I think Lincoln is suggesting that this is also a duty, even of the victorious North, not for them to say, we're great, right? We just won this war. Isn't our perspective the only one that counts? But to have real compassion and care for those who have been suffering both North and South.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, you made a comment about Lincoln and are we living lives of distinction today? Do we, as Christians, live, you know, you talk about living lives that are set apart and holy. Are we doing that? Are we blurring in with the rest of the secular world, or do we live lives of distinction?
Well, I'll let every listener think about that.
Exactly. That's what I was hoping.
But it strikes me that this is an ongoing tension of cultural engagement. We go about our jobs as citizens of a nation and of residents of a city and workers in a certain place of employment, and we do all that, and so there's plenty of connections, but there's also the heavenly citizenship that should set us apart. And mm-hmm. so I hope we can do that and to remember we both live in that way even as we care for others. We don't just say my heavenly citizenship makes me not care about the suffering that I see in this world. So we have to keep both of those things together.
Mm-hmm. So Lincoln's words, an enduring call to reconciliation, great line, by the way. To talk about reconciliation, because it seems like it's a buzzword that we like using, but is there a shared vision out there when it comes to reconciliation that both sides are going, we get it, we understand it, we're just trying to get there, or is it lopsided?
Well, this is part of the challenge, and we were talking about this off air, but I think we need to be working towards this, but maybe part of the challenge is we're still, through those difficult conversations, trying to articulate that common vision. Mm-hmm. Now, I will not claim to be an expert on this topic because I know there are some of our Bible professors at Northwestern are digging into this in great ways, but my understanding is we need to be working through this, recognizing the common unity that exists as Christians, first of all. And then I hope that identity can pull us into the difficult conversations. And mm-hmm. I'm going to acknowledge they're not easy. But I think if the church can show unity across a lot of other identities, it will be a powerful witness.
Mm-hmm. So President Lincoln, we drop him into our world today, what would he be thinking?
Well, I always like to joke, he'd be thinking, why are those big metal birds up in the sky? he would have all kinds of reactions to technology. But I would hope that we could learn his wisdom, which is to say, yes, be committed to your perspective, but also be fair-minded with those who differ.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually goes to the third passage that I think he's drawing on, because he offers this criticism of the South and about slaveholding. He doesn't mince his words. And then he says, let us judge not that we not be judged. And that's Matthew chapter 7.
Right.
But of course, Americans like to take that and say, well, don't judge me, man, mm-hmm. right? That it just means that judgment, we shouldn't judge anything. He's not suggesting that, nor is Jesus, right? But it's a humble judgment that comes from evaluating things truly that allows you to criticize someone else while also recognizing that your side might have problems too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a Lincolnian vision that would be really useful in our day.
Lincolnian. Did you get that one, Rebecca? Lincolnian? I love that.
Word of the day.
Word of the day, Lincolnian. Well, Jonathan, I always appreciate when you come into the studio because I love history, but not a lot. I mean, I love it when I hear it from you, but it's always so interesting, and you always give such a great biblical understanding, and I'm excited about the Liberty Faith and Liberty Discovery Center. That's going to be interesting.
Yes. Well, so first of all, we're just going to keep building that love of history
exactly.
with you and with all of our listeners.
Yeah, especially with me because you know me and my love of history. And so I'm looking forward to hearing more about that in the future, and I appreciate the fact that they have come to you and said, we want you to be one of our scholars and advisors. So that's very cool as well. So I feel like I got an inside edge to the Faith and Liberty Discovery Center. So thank you.
As we can trace it, I think it's going to be great, and as they hope to open in 2020.
Yeah. Now, with school season wrapping up, what happens for you in the summer?
Well, we have two more weeks of classes here at Northwestern mm-hmm. and then a week of finals. So everybody will be working hard. And then after we get grades turned in, I'll be around. I have two conferences to go to this summer and otherwise here in Minneapolis, hopefully writing and doing some research.
Yeah, we appreciate all you do. Thank you so much for coming into the studio. Dr. Jonathan Dan Hartog has been my guest. And you can go Google his article in the Wall Street Journal. And it's titled Lincoln's Biblical Lessons of Reconciliation. It's 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back in just a minute. morning. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Galatians 4, 6 says, "And because you are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of His Son into your hearts, crying out, Abba, Father." How lovely is that? We're going to take a little break for news. When we come back, Dr. David Aikman will be with us in about 7 or 8 minutes. Twenty-four minutes until the top of the hour. Your day is getting started well. Thanks for listening to the show. Dr. David Aikman is up next. 24 minutes until the top of the hour. Right before we get to David, Dr. Fred de Blasio, he's a researcher. He said, "How can those who have been deeply wounded or even traumatized be expected to forgive?" He comments on this and points to Jesus as the example.
First of all, this violation like that is so incredibly hurtful, and it does get to the core of the person, and you have to be very empathetic. But at the same time, you have to look at the one person who really has the answer on forgiveness, and that is Jesus. Jesus in the scripture is over 24 interpersonal forgiveness scriptures, and most of them involve Jesus and his attitude and position on forgiveness. And he was being nailed to the cross, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." Now, one can argue and say, "Well, I'm not Jesus." But aren't we supposed to be moving in that direction to be more and more like Christ and to follow what he wants us to do?
If you want to hear that full interview, Dr. Fred de Blasio is his name. Go to myfaithradio.com, type in forgiveness relationships, or try spelling his last name, de Blasio, just like it sounds. We'll take a little break, and then Dr. David Aikman will be with us in just a minute.
Is your teen a low achiever? Maybe he doesn't make the grades you'd like, or never remembers to do his chores around the house. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. There are certain situations in the home where I'm in favor of offering rewards for accomplishments. Now, I'm not saying you should have a performance-based relationship where you retract love when your child makes a mistake. Instead, I'm advocating a little motivation for your teen. Chances are you know what your child wants. You also know his areas of underachievement. So connect the two. Offer financial rewards for meeting goals. You might as well take what you'd give at birthdays and Christmas and spread it out over 12 months in order to help your child reach his goals.
Are you struggling with your teen? Get a free online parenting course called Tough Guys and Drama Queens at freeparentingcourse.com.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
It is 21 minutes until the top of the hour. Love that theme song intro. That's for Dr. David Aikman, voiced by himself. Awesome. Love it. Good morning, David.
Morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Or is this Bill?
It's Bill. Yeah, you talk to Paul.
Good.
Paul gets you on the phone, and then you get me.
So, all right.
Yeah. So.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, David, we've got this North and South Korea meeting. Who is behind this historic event?
Well, I think you have to basically give credit to Trump, because if you look at the whole panorama of North Korean relations with South Korea and the U.S., over the last 30 years, nobody was doing anything until President Trump arrived and started issuing fairly serious ultimatums to the North,
mm-hmm.
and basically put pressure on the Chinese to limit their imports from North Korea, to impose sanctions on both the regime and individuals. And that made it clear that the U.S. was getting really serious. And then, in addition to that, the United States made it apparent that if North Korea did anything as foolish as to send a rocket carrying a nuclear weapon anywhere close to the United States, that would spell the end of the entire regime.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Kim Jong-un realized that his days were numbered as a sort of a freelance rocket manager, if he wanted to keep his regime intact.
Mm-hmm. So this would be a formal end to the Korean War, 65 years after the hostilities stopped.
Well, that's right. I mean, basically, the joint statement of Kim Jong-un and President Moon of South Korea made it clear that the North-South Korean War was going to come to an end. Well, that obviously has to involve the United States. So President Trump, when he meets with Kim Jong-un, has to make it clear to Kim that if he's going to have this sort of détente with South Korea, there has to be the same kind of détente with the United States as well. And I think without Trump's very tough position on North Korea, I don't think Kim would have come to this position.
Mm-hmm. So what agreement are they trying to have that we walk away with going, this is what's being proposed, what do we actually believe is going to happen?
Well, of course, the big issue is the commitment to denuclearization that mm-hmm. Kim signed. Well, of course, the South Koreans don't have any nuclear weapons anyway, so okay. Their only participation is to make sure that the North goes along with the agreement. And North Korea apparently agreed to allow in international monitors and, in fact, perhaps the world media to observe them destroying their nuclear testing locations, which is a stupendously important thing, because if you destroy your key testing facilities and locations, you don't have anything to start up with if you really want to resume your nuclear program. So this is essentially a sort of one-stop deal for South Korea and the United States if North Korea is serious about carrying through on its commitments.
Mm-hmm. All right, David, let's talk about some of the implications of this event. If this actually starts to, if they become friendlier, is there a chance that North and South Korea people would start to have more interaction with each other? Wouldn't that?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there was a commitment in the joint statement agreement by Kim and Moon to allow family relocations and family reconciliations. And none of the details of that have been made clear. But obviously, the North Koreans have to worry about something pretty significant here. If they really do allow open contact between North Koreans and their South Korean relatives who are currently in exile, that could spell catastrophe for the stability of the North Korean regime.
Mm, I would think
because
so.
The Northerners, who see how prosperous the South is, are going to say to themselves, we don't want this tyranny running our lives anymore up north. And so he's taking a clear risk that he's going to be able to ride the sort of the wave of democratic demands from the North once this thing gets underway.
Yeah, I mean, what if the North Koreans just got 10 minutes on the internet, for example? They could find out that they're...
Well, exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Of course, that's the whole thing. Or if North Korean stores could sell radio stations
right.
that were actually powerful enough to receive mainstream South Korean and other international broadcasts, that would be catastrophic.
Mm-hmm. How strong is the South
Korea?
Go ahead.
Sorry, don't forget that when we were dealing with communist East Germany and a capitalist and democratic West Germany, it was West German TV and radio broadcasts which seriously undermined the ability of the communist regime of East Germany to keep the state together. And as a result, the Berlin Wall collapsed and Germany was reunited. So there could be some very interesting consequences here.
Mm-hmm. David, how significant is the military in North and South Korea? I mean, I watch North Korea and I see their beautiful choreography and, you know, their marches, and I go, this military seems pretty dialed in. But I mean, how strong are they in North and South Korea?
Well, I mean, it is quite formidably powerful. They've got, I think, one of the maybe the fourth or fifth largest army in the whole world, with about 800,000 troops in it, all highly trained and very tightly disciplined. And I don't think there's any doubt that if somebody gave the order to march south, they would all actually do that. So it's still a worrisome issue, because the South Korean forces don't have matching numbers to compete effectively against North Korea. And that's why you have the presence of a United States tripwire of about 30,000 troops who are close to the border of North and South Korea, mm-hmm. who basically would be the first line of defense, and would, if that tripwire was touched, then the United States would be involved in saving South Korea from invasion by the North.
Mm-hmm. Dr. David Akeman is my guest. It's 13 minutes until the top of the hour. We're going to take a very short break and then resume our very stimulating discussion with David. Good morning, 11 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. David Akeman is my guest. We're talking about the North and South Korea meeting, the denuclearization. And David, if they start talking to each other and there's a connection of friends and relatives, North and South Korea, how might that impact the gospel in North Korea?
Well, I think the South Korean Christian community is very evangelical. In large part, and mm-hmm. they would love to be able to share the gospel with their compatriots up north. The question is whether that would be seen by the North Korean communist regime as a threat to its very existence, which, of course, it would be. So whether the North Koreans would be willing to tolerate such a relaxed state of affairs that Southerners could easily come north and share the gospel with anybody they wanted to is an open question at this point, because not even China has an operating system that really works in that in regard to evangelism. So we just have to see.
Mm-hmm.
Much will depend on the visit by President Trump in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm, indeed. David, I was curious your update or your thoughts on the little passing of Alfie Evans, this little boy in the UK that lost his life over the weekend. How will this conversation, do you think, really impact what's going on in Ireland, where you live, regarding the ban on abortion?
Well, it's a good question. I think every Irish conservative Christian realizes that the tendency that started with the prohibition of Alfie to go overseas to get alternative treatment marks the emergence of a sort of state-centered control of what happens to children, regardless of the wishes of the parents.
Wow. Yeah.
So I think you're going to have medical authorities essentially making decisions on how life should or shouldn't be continued for children who need special care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a difficult story. It was heart-wrenching, really.
Right.
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit.
People in Ireland realize the implications for their own country.
Of course. I would like to talk to you a little bit about the White House Correspondents' Dinner, because I know you've attended them in the past, and I found that almost ironic that it is, in fact, a fundraiser, and they raise money for kids to go to journalism school so they can become just like them.
Yes, just like us. Terrific.
Yeah.
You know, I have been to several foreign correspondent dinners in the past when I was working at Time magazine. And usually they are a roast. The president of the United States is usually fairly moderately sort of teased and criticized. And the jokes are usually fairly robust and ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
But the level of sort of toxicity of the humor attacking all Republican politicians, especially the president of the United States, and worst of all, at this particular correspondence dinner, actually making overt fun of not only Kellyanne Conway, President Trump's senior advisor, but also Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the spokesman. And mm-hmm. I think even some of the regular, fairly liberal reporters from the White House were offended by how she was pilloried by this Michelle comedian lady, I think. And also the language, the bawdiness of the humor was just beyond the pale. Mm-hmm. I think something has to be done to bring this whole business back into shape.
It seemed to me that one of the highlights of that dinner was the fact that the president himself would get up and have kind of a funny talk, a little funny speech, largely written by comedy writers, but well-delivered usually. I remember President Obama was quite adept at delivering the punchline, and I thought George W. Bush did a good job, and Clinton. And I mean, traditionally, right. It's been the president, and if the president's not there, then it seems to be goes downhill from there.
Well, I think so. And given the fact that you have to assume that the sort of tastelessness and aggressiveness of the comedian's pokes at the president and the administration and the people working in it were a sort of continued response to the snub of the fact that President Trump, for the second year in a row, declined the invitation and still continues to call the White House, well, not just the media and generally, the enemies of the American people. And an interesting poll was done recently that showed 31% of Americans actually agree that the media is at enmity with the U.S. government, and particularly the Trump administration.
Yeah.
So the media has certain to clean its act up. And, of course, I think President Trump would help matters if he extended an olive branch to the media just to let them know that he doesn't really regard them as his mortal adversaries,
mm-hmm.
and he would like to return to a more civilized dialogue with the press.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate, David, you coming on to the show. I always look forward to our conversations. Thank you so much once again, and I'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Yep.
Thank you for inviting me.
You bet. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
4 minutes until the top of the hour. Let's take a very short break and wrap up the show. Thanks to Dr. David Aikman and Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog for being such excellent guests in the hour today. It's always a pleasure to speak to both of them. They have such insights, and I always learn so much. I hope you did too. John chapter 10, verse 11 says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. We are so precious, and he loves us so much. Let's go live for him today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting Faith Radio. I will see you tomorrow. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.